Thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I'm Wally and I'm your host. Will T and Ray Jeezy are out. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. I got to get started pretty early because, you know, I got an important guest coming on. I got a bunch of guests. I got a plethora of guests. You know what I'm talking about. Will T would know. Well, excuse me, before I get into that, join me this Sunday, August 4th at Bowie Bay Sox Stadium for the first annual celebrity kickball game in honor of my close friend and homie, Barry Sharp. B Sharp, that's what we called him. And all affected by mental illness and suicide. This game will include former NFL players like Santana Moss, Lee Bowden, who am I missing? Infasante Shanko. The kickball game will be after the Bowie Bay Sox game. The Bowie Bay Sox game is at 1:35 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can buy your tickets at www.groupmatics.events/event/Lawrence Law. Lawrence Law is spelled LAURYNSLAW. Make sure you step out and come out. Again, August 4th on Sunday, again, support this cause. Suicide, mental illness is a big thing that no one talks about. It's like that. It's that illness, that condition, people tend to put it on the side. It's a very big deal in today's culture. You know, people don't want to admit it, but they deal with a lot of depression. So make sure you come out again at Bowie Bay Sox Stadium to support the cause. All right, Will T would normally say this. Let's get into our tradition, the pregame. Here are our topics. Sports Journey Media's Redskins reporter Diane Cheesebro will join the show to talk about the Redskins training camp at 8:20. Talk Nats podcast Kevin Nibley will join the show to talk about the Nats trade deadline moves and their series against the Atlanta Braves. They lost the series 2-3 to Atlanta Braves. That was a big loss, a big hit. At 8:30, Truth About It's Washington Wizards insider Troy Halliburton will join the show to talk about the Washington Wizards offering Bradley Beal an extension and Tommy Shepard being the Wizards' new general manager. At 8:40, Birds Watchers Aaron Gershon will join the show to talk about the Baltimore Orioles trade deadline moves. Finally, at 8:50, Quarterly Reports, Armand Lee will join me to talk about Manny Pacquiao defeating Keith Thurman and Javonte Davis defeating Ricardo Nunez via a TKO to retain his junior lightweight title. I think we lost our call. Hold on. I think I had Diane on the line, so let me make sure I get Diane back. All right, so I love live radio. So right, I love it because anything can happen. Anything can happen. So right now we have Sports Journeys Media's Redskins reporter Diane Cheesebro on the line. What's going on, Diane?
How are you?
No, I'm fine. You know, I enjoyed having you on last time. You know, you were amazing. You're a great guest.
I had such a blast talking to you guys. That was too fun. I thought, I'm not supposed to be working. This is too fun.
Oh, I know. I know. But you make it fun on this end, too. You make it very fun on our end.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you. That's awesome. You guys do, too.
Oh, thank you.
We talk about everything, right?
Everything. Talk about everything. All right, so Diane, obviously you're down there at Richmond. Trent, you know, the Trent saga is taking over camp. How is it playing out there?
It's been kind of interesting because last week the offensive line was a mess. It was just, I felt bad for the defensive line, and I'm really bullish on the defensive line this year. And they just were, like, Matt Ioannidis was out there practicing spin moves and stuff. They were having fun a little bit, but they weren't getting any work. Mm-hmm. It's only been in the last couple days that they've started to solidify a little bit and had some consistency. Today, you know, the right side was fine. They had, and Chase Roullier's back now, yeah. So that makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. You know, his first day was yesterday, did a little bit more today. So with Chase and Brandon and Morgan on the right. And then they worked in Donald Penn a little bit later in practice, and then this afternoon in walkthroughs, he was working with the ones. But Wes Martin and I think it was between Wes Martin and who else was playing right guard? Darn, I'm drawing a blank. But they just seemed to be doing a little bit more, which I think is probably had a little bit to do with the fight that broke out today.
Yeah, heard.
The defensive line's been frustrated because they're not getting any work done. And, I mean, they were jawing and just, oh, my God, they were just, Caleb Brantley was, like, just mouthing off about, y'all can't even block backups and stuff. And, it was just, it was amazing. I'm not surprised the fight broke out. But, anyway, it's come together a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, it's going to dominate. Now we've got the talk of Trent getting traded, possibly. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's going to be a distraction, I think, until something, you know, happens that is just confirmed.
Yeah. So what's your vibe on it? What's your vibe on the Trent thing? Do you think it's true that they're trying to shop Trent, or do you think this is all smoke?
I think they're talking because I just think that they would. And it's so funny that you asked me that, because 5 minutes from now I might change my mind. Mm-hmm. But I've been of the mind that Trent will be back against Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
But I find it really interesting. You've probably heard about the fact that Donald called Trent, you know, before he signed.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it, you know, it's funny that Trent said, yeah, go ahead and sign. Did he say that? Well, you know, if they're that good of friends and he hates the organization that much, would he say that to a friend if he really thinks he's leading him into a bad situation? Mm-hmm. Is he confident that he's coming back and so he knows that he'll have a good backup in case he gets hurt? It's funny. My instinct is still that he is coming back, but, you know, again, ask me in 5 minutes.
I know.
Because I might change my mind. I wish I could be more definitive.
It's no, I get
really,
it.
Yeah, it's just a really strange situation right now. And until I hear from either Trent himself, rather than people that know him, or, you know, somebody official with the team, it's really hard to make a determination.
Yeah, it's like it's a soap opera. It's like One Life to Live, All My Children. It's like a big-time soap opera.
I'm serious. Oh, you nailed it. It really is. You know, and when is it not, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, the last couple of years, it's been better, but it seems to just circle the team.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff.
It needs to happen for this team. This team needs to have a soap opera. They wouldn't operate, right, if they didn't have a story.
They wouldn't know how to behave.
Yeah.
Or, you know, doing damage control, right?
Yeah, something would be wrong if this team didn't have any drama. Something would be wrong. Seriously wrong.
did Bill Belichick somehow, you know, did Dan Snyder channel somebody from New England?
Exactly.
That's weird.
I know.
Yeah, that's weird.
So you mentioned Donald Penn. How did he look? I mean, the skin signed him to a 1-year deal. How did he look?
I mean, he looked rusty.
Okay.
He looked rusty. Yeah, he looked rusty. You know, that all the guys need to get into football shape, and they're getting there. But, you know, he didn't play all of last year, and these guys work out as best they can in the off season. But I'll be watching closely, you know, for the next 4 or 5 days of practice, and he'll probably begin to look better. But in my estimation, he looked rusty, and he didn't do that much, so it was kind of hard to tell. But he does. You know, he knows the Grudens, having come from Tampa Bay and Oakland, of course. So he's going to be comfortable in Jay's system. That's good. That's a bonus. So I think it's going to be more about his physical shape than it's going to be learning the system. So I suspect that being a professional athlete, he'll do what he can to get in shape and probably work extra hours with Bill Callahan and the other guys and stuff like that. But I mean, he did look rusty to me.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene right now. I have Sports Journey Media's Redskins reporter Diane Cheesebrow on the line. So now let's get to the real part of camp. I don't feel like talking about Trent all the time, and I feel like he's killing the airways.
Right.
How is Dwayne Haskins looking?
He looks better the last couple days. I mean, he had a rough start last week, to be expected by a rookie, but. Man, that guy throws a pretty pass. When he's confident and the call gets off right, he does throw a pretty pass. And it was pretty early, and I can't remember if it was 11-on-11s or 7-on-7s, but he threw a pass to Jordan Reed, who put a move on might have been Monte Nicholson or Landon Collins, can't remember which, but I thought to myself, man, you know, come week five or six, when maybe Dwayne is a little more comfortable with the verbiage and he's playing more than thinking, that combination could be deadly to defensive coordinators, him and Jordan Reed, because Jordan looks great. I mean, he looks so good right now. He looks healthy, moving great, you know, putting moves on the safeties that's making them, you know, mad. And if those two really get on the same page, that's going to keep some defensive coordinators up at night. But, yeah, I mean, he's still learning, but you can see why he's special, and you can see why they picked him in the first round, no doubt. He looks – and it's something – seems to have clunked, you know, like you're thinking, and then boom, it kind of happens, and the light bulb goes off, and, I mean, he's not ready to start, but, I mean, he seems to be getting more comfortable day by day, and he's not, his biggest trouble early on was getting, you know, in and out of the huddle for what the huddle is in training camp, but he seems to have gotten a little bit more comfortable in the last couple of days, which is good to see. I still don't think he'll start week one, but I don't think, I mean, if he keeps learning the way he's learning, he should start by, you know, before the end of the season, at any rate.
So how?
Well, I guess, unless Case, that was probably your next question.
Yeah, now you know it.
Case looks good. He looks like a vet. He's great. What did I say about great minds, right?
I think we all we think alike, definitely.
That's right. Yeah, no, Case looks pretty good. He's still learning, too, but he looks like the vet that he is, and he's a little bit more mobile, so, and he's thrown some pretty passes too, connected with some guys, you know, Jeremy Sprinkle a couple times, and I love the way Jay's mixing it up. I mean, he literally is mixing it up when it comes to the ones against the twos and, you know, the twos against the threes, and he's really mixing, you know, putting guys, you know, let me think, Colt McCoy's had a lot of time. He's had a lot of time last couple of days, and putting him in and out. So the Case looks like the vet that he is to me. You know, he's going to pick it up pretty quick. He's been around. Yeah.
So I'm going to talk about a guy that we both like. You know, I'm going to keep talking about him. He's a wide receiver, tall guy, can jump out. He can jump off the field, to be honest with you. And Josh Dotson, how is he looking?
He looks good.
Okay, good.
He looks good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he looks real good. He looked especially good today. Fought hard for a couple passes, which I love to see from him. Mm-hmm. Which I might have said before when I was on that's been an issue with me is that I got the feeling that he didn't fight hard enough for balls. But no, I think he looks real good. We talked to Ike Hilliard yesterday, and or maybe it was today. My days all run together with Mark Camp. I apologize for that.
No, it's okay.
And he says and I believe him. He's really impressed with. You know, Josh Jackson it's been such a slow arrival for him.
Mm-hmm.
But every coach to a man will say how hard he has worked throughout his time here. And he has looked good. He has looked good. I don't want to spend too much time on any one guy, but he's looked real good. He's caught some good passes. He's fought for them, you know, against guys like Josh Norman and good. Yeah, I like what I see.
So who's been your camp standout, if you had to choose one?
Oh, my God, Jimmy Moreland.
Oh, everyone loves him.
I mean, I thought early on here, you know, every year we got a camp sweetheart, right? Mm-hmm. Last year was Trey Quinn.
Yeah.
But I think he's, you know, early on I thought, like, during May camp and stuff, I thought, you know, he was a ball hawk at JMU, but he's going to come to his NFL moment, and the speed's going to freak him out, and, you know, he's just not going to be who he thought he was or who he was there. I mean, I think he led the record at JMU in interceptions or something like 18 or something like that. But he looks really good. I mean, I think he plays big. Like, he jumps high, and he gets his hands, you know, in places where it looks really hard for especially a guy that's like 5'11". He went up against, not Cam Sims, Steve Sims, the other day. And Steve had the ball. I think Colt McCoy threw it. And it was like an old over-the-shoulder kind of pass. And Jimmy Moreland was right there. And he was obviously too short to go up and get the ball. So he waited until the ball was in Sims' hands, and then he just punched. He put his arms under his armpits, the receiver's armpits, and punched it out that way. Yeah, it was a pretty unique kind of play. I've never really seen. I mean, I've seen it before, but not. Yeah, I think he might be the ball hawk that he was at JMU. He plays bigger than he looks, and he's had several breakups. Maybe I want to say off the top of my head, 3 or 4 interceptions in camp so far. Yeah, that's who my camp sweetheart is this year.
See, I thought you were gonna say Josh Dotson, but Jimmy Moreland, I can take that.
Yeah. Yeah. I generally try to keep. I mean, you know, the vets that have been there for a while, you're gonna expect them to. They need to be doing that.
Yeah.
Like, they need to stand out. That's their job.
Mm-hmm.
But I like to watch people that you haven't really either that are rookies or that have needed to step up that have it in the past. And he's caught my eye. And of course, as a former JMU alum,
I'm
not gonna lie that I have a little bit of bias, maybe. But seriously, if it was somebody else, I would keep an eye on them. But I do like him. I like Jimmy Moreland. I think he's gonna make the team if he keeps playing the way he's playing.
Oh, I hope so. He's a guy that everyone's talking about. I think everyone, players.
Oh,
I think
are other people talking about
him? Oh, Josh Norman was talking about him not too long ago.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
So
yeah,
he's a guy that's he's high on everybody's, you know, eyes, especially the fan base. The fan base loves him. He's like that guy now that everybody's kind of fixated on. And I think that once the preseason starts, that's a guy that people will kind of eye on in terms of how he plays against either it's the twos or he gets the chance to play against the ones or the third string players. But he's a guy that everybody wants to see.
He's been out with the ones a lot.
Oh, wow.
I mean, he has been out there like a nickel and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Dunny and Norman have been on the outside, but Jimmy Moreland's been in there. I've been really impressed because of the fact that he's playing against and with the ones. Yeah, he's had quite a lot of time out there with the ones.
He's definitely a special guy. Well, Diane, thanks for being on. You know, I appreciate you.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you so much. You know, I know you're a busy lady. I know you're a busy lady, and I appreciate you doing the show, just coming on to do the show. I really appreciate that.
Oh, anytime. Have a blast chatting with you. Call anytime.
You know what? Matter of fact, Ray and I know I'm 100% that I'll be there Monday. I'll be at training camp Monday.
Oh, good.
I'll be there.
Please text me. Let me know where you are when you're there.
I will. Yeah. Will do.
Yeah, please do. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Diane.
You're welcome. Fine, sir.
All right.
Take care.
Take care.
Okay, you too.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
That is the great, I don't want to say just Diane. That is the great Diane Cheesebro. Again, she's from Sports Journey Media's, she's Sports Journey Media's Redskins reporter. You can also catch her on Twitter, and I have it here somewhere, folks. I have it right here. On Twitter, at Di Cheesebro. And you can, and I'm going to spell it out for you. It's D-I. Cheesebrough. Make sure you hit her with a follow. You know, because again, she's awesome. She did her. She's awesome. That's all I'm gonna say. She's awesome. Hey, Talk Nats Kevin Nibley will join me after the break to talk about the Nats trade deadline moves and their series against the Braves. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene for ages. You dig? Deuces. You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I am Wally, and I am your host. Will T and Ray are out. Those are my homies. They're out taking a break, but I told them I was going to hold it down for the Urban Sports Scene. But right now, we have newbie Kevin Nibley from Talk Next podcast on the line. What's going on, Kevin?
Hey, how's it going, guys? Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for being on. You know, it's always cool to have someone new to the show. Also, Kevin, before we get into, you know, what happened today in terms of the trade deadline and also the Braves series, can you tell us about your podcast and also Talk Nats itself?
Yeah, totally. Our podcast is basically the podcast for TalkNats.com, which for anyone who is a big Nats fan is probably the best place to go on the internet, talk about the Nats, you know, better than the Washington Post comment section, I think better than Masson. There's like a really good community of people on there every day. And yeah, so totally go check out TalkNats.com. It's an amazing place to talk about the team. And yeah, our podcast is the Talk Nats podcast. We do about once a month or so. We interview a lot of our beat writers. We've got a couple former players, you know, and it's just really for hardcore Nats fans, not for the casual fans, very much for people who live and die with the team every day.
I love it. So, the Nationals acquired, before we get into the Braves series, I'll talk about, you know, the deals they made. The Nationals acquired right-handed reliever Daniel Hudson from the Toronto Blue Jays and left-handed reliever Elias. I know I have struggled. Okay. Elias. I know I want to say Eli, Elias, or, you know,
I think
Elias.
Mike Rizzo didn't even pronounce it correctly.
from the Mariners, and also they got right-handed Hunter Strickland. How do these arms improve the pen?
I think Hudson is, you know, certainly an improvement over probably every reliever we have, other than Doolittle. He's just a rental. He's you know, we have him just for the rest of the season, and then he's a free agent. In terms of Elias and Strickland, they're, I would say, kind of buy low, kind of lottery ticket guys. I think, you know, those deals, we control them for two more seasons after this. So I think what Rizzo is doing was basically trying to upgrade the pen on the margins. Elias has closed a couple games for Seattle. His numbers this year aren't amazing. But, you know, when you're looking at replacing, Javi Guerra or Dan Blazek, right, you know, just got sent out, potentially Tony Sipp or Matt Graves, you know, it's an upgrade. And Strickland, I think, some people might remember him. He was the guy who got into the brawl with Bryce Harper a couple of years ago. Yeah. He had a couple really good seasons as a setup man for San Francisco. He's been injured, so he's just, you know, been back on the Mariners for, I think he's only pitched three innings this year. Yeah. It's not a bad lotto ticket, but at the same time, if Nats fans were looking for a real sexy move or, you know, getting someone that's going to really put us into a position to maybe pass Atlanta or to do some damage in the playoffs, I don't really know if they did that today.
Yeah, obviously, you know, a lot of Nats fans wanted Green out of Detroit. But I think the asking price was Carter Kieboom, and I don't think that was going to ever happen. I thought I heard correctly. Did Atlanta pick up Green? The Braves picked up Green?
Yeah, Atlanta did pick up Green. The reports were that the Tigers wanted Kieboom. I think it was smart of them to not do that.
I agree.
If they did get Green, I think Green would have come with the rest of this year and next year. But, Kieboom, I believe, is a top 20. I think he's number 21 in all the major leagues in terms of prospects. He's a really big prospect. And to give up 6-7 years of having someone you could put in at third base, especially if, you know, Rendon might not be here next year, Dozier's done after this year potentially. I mean, you know, they do have a need at the position Kieboom's, you know, plays, and he's a cheap option and a good prospect. I can't blame them for not sending him to Detroit for a year and a half of a reliever. And Green, he's had a very good season this year, but some of his peripheral stats suggest you know, maybe he's been a little lucky. Green isn't, you know, it wasn't like they were trading for Mariano Rivera there.
I know, right?
You know, so I think they made a good decision not moving Kiboom for Green.
No, I agree with you. I think Kiboom you keep in your pocket. Obviously, you want him to be your future second baseman. Because you don't expect Dozier to be there next season, in my opinion. And also, you never know what's going to happen with Anthony Rendon. So he's a guy that you have to keep. You're listening to the Urban Sports Team right now. I have Talk Nats podcast Kevin Nibley on the line. So who would you have liked this team to target? You know, that was out there on the market.
You know, I think what is rough about this deadline and a big problem, unfortunately, the team's going to have down the stretch is, you know, we don't know if Max Scherzer's really going to come back soon. Mm-hmm. It seems very vague about that injury. So I was surprised that they didn't get another starting pitcher.
Okay.
I don't think they had to go out and get, like, the whale, like Madison Bumgarner or what the Astros did getting Zach Greinke. I don't know if they needed like a top of the rotation guy, but I really think they needed someone, you know, that you could throw in the 4 or 5 slot because, you know, let's face it, Joe Ross has been awful lately.
Yeah, and
he got roughed up lately. And, you know, for the Nats to make the playoffs, they're probably going to have to play about 600 baseball down the stretch. And if, you know, Scherzer's hurt and, two fifths of your rotation, you know, or Seti and Ross, like they're not going to do it. They've been about 500 since the All-Star break, and that's because, you know, Scherzer's been out and they've had some bad starts. You know, they had a game against LA where they just got destroyed with Ross. You know, Seti got destroyed the other night, and you know I they have Jeremy Hellickson who's trying to come back from injury. Maybe he could fill in, but I was surprised they didn't get another pitcher. I would have liked to have seen them, you know, maybe go in the market. You know, they're saying Matthew Boyd on Detroit was maybe available. You know, but even something cheaper like, you know, Nova in Pittsburgh could have just helped. You know, they didn't necessarily need an ace, but they needed someone who you could throw out there every fifth day and wouldn't lose the game for you. You know, at least to get through you know, these next couple weeks where we're not sure they're going to have Scherzer pitching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually wanted them to get, in terms of relievers, I wanted them to get, like, Michael Givens out of Baltimore.
Yeah.
I thought that, I mean, because you're not trying to trade a lot. Givens' market has gone down, obviously, because of he hasn't had the strongest season, but his track record has been good. And that's a guy that I thought that would be good for the bullpen because, you know, as much as, you know, Fernando Rodney has, as well as he's pitched, he's a guy still. He's 40-something years old, you know. So at the end of the day, you can't pitch him twice in a doubleheader and think, you know, he's gonna be great a couple of days after. You know, it's just a lot going on in that arm. So get a younger guy who can throw, can hit 96 to 97 with a nasty slider or a nasty secondary pitch. You know, you need that type of guy in your bullpen. I thought, you know, Michael Givens would be a good fit for this team, especially how cheap the Nationals can be at times.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. The only thing I guess maybe is some people say the Nats and the O's hate each other so much that they wouldn't even be able to talk to them.
No, yeah, I know. That's always been a thing. All right, so let's go to the Braves series. The Nats lost their series to the Braves. The Braves won 2 out of 3 games, including an extra inning afternoon game. Was this a crushing blow to the Nats?
Yeah, I think so. Today was definitely a tough day. It's not impossible. They're 6.5 games back. It's certainly not impossible. They can run down the Braves. You know, I think they're about 55 or so games left of their season. It's possible, but it's certainly not likely. Mm-hmm. I do think, you know, really they probably needed to sweep the series. And at least 2 out of 3 would have kept them, you know, kind of giving them a puncher's chance, but 6.5 is going to be a lot to come back from. And also the Braves, you know, the Braves, you know, upgraded their bullpen today. You know, they got Green from Detroit. I think they also got Mark Melancon. I think if you're an Nats fan, you know, anything's possible. They do still have 7 games left against them. You know, the Braves have been really lucky lately.
Yes.
You know, they, seemingly get every bounce. They don't really have that good of a rotation, but it's just held up enough. It's possible they go in the tank and the Nets get hot, but yeah, I think that loss today, 90% chance that probably seals the fate that the Nets aren't going to win the NL East. But you never know.
You never know. I mean, especially, again, you mentioned like the A's have been lucky. I mean, the Braves have been lucky. You know, they don't have Nick Markakis, and that's a guy that's very important to that lineup. I look at, the Braves that eventually, it's a divisional game, and this was a big game, and the Nats kind of fell short, and the Nats had their injuries too as well. But, I feel like in the long run, if they need to get a guy, they need to get some of those bats back. I'm talking about the Braves to maintain. And I don't know if they can maintain without the bats they're going to be missing.
It's an interesting season. I mean, when you look at it right now, I don't really see who beats the Dodgers in the National League.
No, I'm with you.
And then, after today, after Houston got Zach Greinke, I mean, it's going to be that's hard to see who beats them. It's very hard to me right now. It just seems like each league, maybe the Yankees are in there, but, they're not, like a team like the Braves, for as good of a season as they've had, I mean, it's hard for me to see them going to LA and beating them in the playoffs, but you never know.
Yeah, so Kevin, thanks for coming on, Kevin. So before I let you go, let my listeners know how they can catch you on social media and how can they subscribe to your podcast as well.
Oh, absolutely. Please, check us out on Twitter. It's just at TalkNets Podcast. And from there, we have links to everywhere you can listen to us. We're pretty much on every platform, Spotify, SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, and definitely go to TalkNaps.com. Mm-hmm. We do the podcast about once a month or so, but, TalkNaps is like, new posts every couple of hours, and it's a really great community for Naps fans.
Well, you have a new subscriber. I'm going to subscribe to the podcast. You have a new one right now.
Thank you.
You're so welcome. Hey, Kevin, thanks for being on. I appreciate you.
All right. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
All right. Oh, man. That is TalkNets podcaster Kevin Newbley. Make sure you check out the podcast. I'm a new subscriber already, so you already know I support the homies. The homie, Troy Halliburton, will come on the show to talk about the Wizards offering Bradley Beal an extension and the new GM after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Same for Ages. You dig? Deuces.
I got loyalty, got royalty inside my DNA. Quarter piece, got war and peace inside my DNA. I got power, poison, pain, and joy inside my DNA. I got hustle, though ambition, flow inside my DNA. I was born like this, is born like this, immaculate conception. I transform like this, perform like this, which yells you a new weapon. I don't contemplate, I meditate, then off your head. This that put the kids to bed. This that I got realness. I just kill shit, cause it's in my DNA. I got millions, I got riches building in my DNA.
I love that song, man. You know I love Kendrick. I'm that dude. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I'm Wally, and I'm your host. Like I mentioned before, my man, my folks, Will T, Ray Jeezy, they out. So it's just me. And it's cool, though. I have a whole bunch of guests holding me down. But right now, we have Truth About It's Washington Wizards insider Troy Halliburton on the line. What's good, Troy?
Wally, what's going on, my brother? How y'all doing today, man?
I mean, I'm good, man. It's just me. So it's just me and you. We're going to talk ball. We're going to shoot the breeze like we always do.
That's what's up, man.
You know it.
We can chop it up.
You already know, bruh. You already know. No surprise. The Washington Wizards offered Bradley Beal a 3-year, $111 million max contract extension. Beal and his agent will take their time to think about this offer. Do you think Beal will sign this deal?
No, I can't see it happening, honestly. For me, I just think that it just doesn't make business sense for Beal to sign this deal because, he could wait until next year, sign the same exact 3-year extension, and get more money. Mm-hmm. He could also wait next year, and if he possibly plays well, make all NBA, he could get a lot more money. Mm-hmm. It for a guy who has 2 years already left on his deal, there's really no rush for him to just go ahead and sign a deal. And like I said, it doesn't make business sense. And then added on top of that, he nor anybody else has any idea what the Wizards will look like in 5 years. So I just can't see him signing that deal.
Yeah, I think you're right. In terms of a business decision, I'm all about the money. And I think that, you know, if he plays his cards right, he can definitely has an opportunity to make more money. And, you know, and I started off not being the biggest Bradley Beal fan when he was drafted. And, you know, in terms of some of his game, in terms of his skill set. But he's a guy who's improved every season. So who's to say that he can't make all NBA? You know what I mean? Because he gets better every year.
Yeah, I mean, shoot, he was one guard spot away from making All-NBA this year.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I think he's a lot closer than people would already assume. And as you said, I mean, Bill has kind of gotten better every single year that he's been in the league. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's a good bet that, you know, he's going to come back and be even more improved next season.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. So you're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. Right now I have my homie, Truth About His Washington Wizards insider, Troy Halliburton, on the line. So, Troy, tell me about this time. Tell me about Tommy Shepherd, man. Obviously, he's a guy that it was – at first it was like, you know, is he going to be the general manager? We're not sure yet. We're not – you know, he's an interim at the moment. Now he has the job, and he also has this gamer thing going on. So what makes Tommy Shepherd different from Ernie Grunfeld?
I think the biggest thing that makes Tommy Shepherd different from Ernie Grunfeld is the fact that Tommy has already shown the willingness to think outside of the box with some of his moves. So whereas, you know, Ernie Grunfeld kind of just followed along with the status quo of, you know, just signing, you know, certain free agents and bringing in, you know, I think that there's a running joke amongst, like, Wizards bloggers. But you get the press release from during the Ernie Grunfeld era from when the Wizards added a player, and it always started out with such and such as a proven veteran. You know, so it's proven veteran was kind of like this running joke. And really what that was is like Ernie was just kind of very cliche with a lot of the moves that he would make, whereas Tommy Shepherd has shown a little bit of creativity where he's not just going out and signing, you know, these proven veterans. He's mixed it up with, you know, a combination of, you know, taking gambles on a few younger players. This will be the second opportunity for them to take advantage of the trade they did with the Lakers, where you're gathering former first round draft pick like Mo Wagner.
I like Mo
Wagner. You know, maybe can play better up under the Wizards system.
Yeah.
He's going out and, you know, using, you know, different analytics and statistical databases to help draft a Rui Hachimura when, you know, a lot of more conventional people would have wanted to take a Cam Reddish.
Like me.
you know, I just think that it's really night and day as far as their whole approach to their decision-making process.
Are you an analytical guy, Troy? Are you an analytical guy? Are you a guy that believes in analytics in terms of?
I subscribe to analytics. Okay. I think that my official stance on it is that analytics is really just a piece of the puzzle.
Gotcha.
So it's something that we can use to have more information, but I don't think it's the end all be all. You know, source on everything. So like, you know, you use analytics, you use your eye test, you use your scouting, you use all of these other tools, and then you take all of that information together, and then you're able to make more informed decisions.
No, I'm with you. I think I'm like you. I feel like analytics is good when you, one, if you tailor your team correctly around it, don't just say, we need to shoot more threes and you don't got three-point shooters. I think that's asinine.
Yeah, I think, exactly. I mean, that was kind of the Wizards.
Oh, believe me, I know.
They wanted to do that pace and space era, and they wanted to shoot more threes. And then I can't tell you how many press conferences we went to, and Scott Brett will be there. Well, I mean, we shot the threes.
I'm always amazed when I'm like, dang, everybody wants to be the Warriors, but everybody doesn't have Steph and Clay. Why would you tell John Wall to try to be Steph and he's not Steph? Let him be John Wall. You coach to your players. But that's why I guess that's what I always had an issue with analytics. Is like you're trying to force players to do something that you haven't built as a general manager or a guy who's building a team. You haven't even built the team the way that you want your analytics that your with the research or analytics department has done, you haven't even cultivated a team that fits that.
See, and I agree with that to a certain extent, but I do also believe I take heed to the fact that, you know, you have to allow players to do, you know, kind of what they do well.
Agreed.
But you just can't have people coming out here and just willingly, you know, taking bad shots and doing things because, you know, they aren't good shooters.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a balance that needs to be had with this whole analytical debate.
No, I'm with you, Troy. I'm with you. Hey, Troy, man, I appreciate you for being on. Before I let you go, man, let my listeners know about, like, well, how they can catch you on social media and also about what you got going on, Truth About It.
Yeah, so, I mean, you can always catch me on social media. My Twitter handle is at Troy Halliburg, T-R-O-Y-H-A-L-I-B-U-R. Also, recently, I've kind of taken over as the host of the Locked On Wizards podcast.
Yeah, buddy.
So you can also find me there. I'll be doing a lot of my basketball coverage, like down at the arena and post-game and pre-game stuff. I'll be posting those videos on the Locked On Wizards Twitter handle. And so Locked On Wizards, we're currently in the process of trying to redo the Truth About It site, and we'll be integrating Locked On Wizards into the Truth About It network. So, you know, I think we've got some really big things coming up for this upcoming basketball season.
You already got a new subscriber right here, so you already know. You already
Hey, man. Hey, I'm glad I got a new subscriber, and I got a new feature guest, man.
You already know this. You ain't got to ask me. You just got to tell me.
I had our guy Armand Lee on.
Awesome, man. I do. I'm going to have him on later.
Spent half the episode talking about rap music.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we could talk about Crit all day. You got me on there.
Hey, man. I'm on that Crit, man.
I'm on that new album, bro.
I've been listening to YBN Cordae. I've been listening to Benny the Butcher.
Okay.
I've been listening to Freddie Gibbs.
Okay. We gonna chop it up then. All right. You let me know. You tell me. Forget let me know. You tell me I'm in there.
All right, that's the best. I appreciate you for always having me on and always supporting, man. We're going to continue to push the culture forward, my brother.
You already know, my man. Thanks again, my man. You know I appreciate you.
All right, Wallace. They're
holding down. All right. That is my man, Troy Halliburton from Truth About It. Also, as you heard, you know, the podcast, you make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Y'all make sure y'all do that. That's my homie. You gonna subscribe to his podcast. All right. Y'all going to do the damn thing. All right. Finally. I get to talk about my Baltimore Orioles, man. My Orioles, I get to talk about them. Birds, Watchers, Aaron, Gershon will join me to talk about the Orioles trade deadline moons, or lack thereof, after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene for ages. You dig? Deuces.
Yeah, I done did a lot of things in my day. I admit it, I don't take back what I say. If I said it, then I meant it. All my life I won a Grammy, but I probably never get it. I ain't never had no trophy or no motherfucking ribbon. Up the system, I'm that bend the law, cut the rules. I'm about to risk it all. I ain't got too much to lose. Y'all been eating long enough. It's my turn to cut the food. Pass the plate with my drink. This my day. Lucky you, host you too. Woo! Y'all gotta move. Y'all gotta move. Move. Give me some room, give me some room, give me the juice. How about the coupe? How about the coupe? How about the shoot? Y'all gotta move, y'all gotta move. Give me the juice. Back on my bullets, my back to the wall, turn my back on you, all of you finished. Back to these bullets, it's back to the job, put my map out and all of you running.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I'm Wally. And I'm your host, Will T and Ray are out. You all know, like, I never get to talk about the Orioles anymore, especially since the Orioles been bad and I felt like I shouldn't be talking about them because we're located near the DMV. We're located, you know, in Nationals country. And I grew up being a Baltimore Oriole fan. You all know I'm a Cal Ripken fan. You know, I grew up watching Cal. I grew up watching, you know, folks like Mike Devereaux, Brady Anderson, Mulligan, you know, a lot of guys, man. A lot of guys you don't even know about. Before we had Rafael Palmeiro, I was watching the Baltimore Orioles. But right now we have co-expert at Birds Watchers, Aaron Gershon, on the line. What's going on, Aaron?
Hey, how's the guys doing? Thanks for having me on.
Oh, no problem, Aaron. Like, it's just me, Aaron. Like, my co-hosts are, like, Nats fans, so they're out. So it gave me the opportunity. This gives me the opportunity to talk Baltimore, talk about the Orioles. Like, this was it for me.
Oh, that's great.
I had to do this. I was like, you know what?
Very surprising.
I know. I was like, I have this slot open, and I have this slot open. And I'm like, I want to talk Orioles. Like, I want to do this.
Yeah.
So before,
hey, man, I mean, you know what? The last month has been decent. It's been watchable.
Yes, I know. You know, like you know, the one thing about the Orioles, their team, they try hard. You know, they may not have talent, but they try hard.
Absolutely. I mean, especially offensively. Yeah. I mean, the best. They have. There's a lot of guys in that lineup who have been. I mean, Hanser Alberto coming out of nowhere, Ernesto Nunez. Who could have predicted he'd be a 25 home run guy? So they've got some bats. Obviously, the pitching is, you know, not fun to watch. But you're right. They grind it out, and you know, they're in a lot of pretty tight games. And they just, not surprisingly, they don't have the team right now to win those close games. But once they do, I mean, it's a different story you're going to talk about.
Yeah, and I feel bad. Like, for a guy I always feel bad about is like Dylan Bundy. I always wish that his arm never like gave out. Like, I wish he had the arm that he had when we drafted him. Like, he could still throw 97 and 99. I mean, he almost topped 100 when they drafted him out of high school, because he's a good pitcher in terms of having, you know, has all these pitches, can throw multiple pitches for strikes. But that, like, that velocity, it, you know, if I wish he could just still reach 97 and 99. I mean,
he'd be a whole different pitcher.
He would.
I mean, yeah, the low velocity just makes him hittable. And when you're pitching the AL East for the Yankees and the Red Sox and Tampa to an extent, I mean, you're just not going to get hitters out throwing like that.
Yeah. But so before we talk about the Orioles, and I'm already talking about the Orioles, before we get deep into the trade deadline moves, can you let our listeners know about Birds Watchers?
Yeah. So Birds Watchers, we're with the Fansided Network, which some of your listeners might be familiar with. Fansided has blogs for all baseball, Major League Baseball teams, NFL, NBA, NHL, and a lot of the power college teams. Mm-hmm. And then, so obviously, the Nats have a website. I believe it's called, I want to say, District on Deck.
Yeah,
that's their site. Mm-hmm. So that's one for your national fans out there. But
they don't need to know about that.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. This is finally some Baltimore.
Exactly.
But yeah, I run the site along with Nick Stevens, who's a great guy, baseball junkie, and then we have three other writers. One, his name is Chuck Bomell. He's awesome. He's more into the minor league system. He knows everything about every Orioles prospect at every level. It's pretty amazing. And then we have Jesse Morrison, who's a student at Arizona State, and he actually just did an interview with Gary Thorne. That's up on our website. That went out, I believe, on Monday. It was pretty dang cool. So that's worth checking out. And then we just added another writer who we're excited to bring on as well, in Austin White. So good stuff happening there. We just broke our record in a month for page views this month.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I saw that article. So was that – he was interviewing – I mean, Thorne about – was it about retirement too?
Yeah, I believe there was some talk that he might meet near the end. I gotta admit, I wasn't the one to edit, and I've been crazy busy these last 2 days, so I haven't got a chance to read it fully. But I know Jesse, who was at Arizona State, got to talk to Gary while they were playing the Diamondbacks last week. And I know there's a lot of good stuff on, you know, his broadcasting career coming up and how he started doing stuff at the University of Maine. And then, you know, he was doing all these big events, and then he went on to the Orioles after doing World Series and Stanley Cup. So it's a pretty cool timeline, and I didn't get to catch all of it. So the retirement stuff, that's worth watching. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
Let the listeners go read it. I'm sure it's great. I'll get to it as well.
So I was going through my Twitter timeline while I was at work, you know, because it's hard to focus when, you know, trade deadline moves are going on, and, you know, I'm thinking like Michael Givens is gone. Like he's gone. Like it's a guarantee that Michael Givens is gone. So I'm still waiting. I'm stalling the time. Like, okay, I'm looking through my phone. It's 4:00. Michael Givens is still in Baltimore Oriole. Like, what's up with that?
It's shocking. I mean, every contender can benefit from having a bullpen arm. You even look at the Yankees in the division, and they have, I mean, on paper, they have a bullpen that anyone dreams of they could add to it. That's how baseball works nowadays.
Yeah.
It's all about shortening the game and having guys who are just electric in the last 4 to 5 minutes. Mm. So, Shane Givens not come off the board was really confusing. I got to wonder if the Orioles asking price was too high, or, you know, he's been a little up and down this year, which then he had the blown save right before the deadline, which is kind of a, you know, not the best time to have that.
Yeah.
So maybe that decreased his value, and Baltimore decided, hell, we're just going to hold on to him. But that one was definitely the big shock. He was the guy, if anyone were to put money on to be moved, it had to be Givens. And know, he's still in white and orange right now.
Yeah. So you believe that home run he gave up in Anaheim was the reason why he's still an Oriole? Is that what you believe?
I think that's part of it how this trade deadline was, and mm-hmm. with, you know, all these GMs refusing to give up prospects unless it was an absolutely perfect deal. You saw teams like the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Red Sox, they didn't make any moves. Mm-hmm. And it had to just be that. I mean, even in free agency, you know, these GMs are much cheaper nowadays, yeah. and they're not going out and spending as much, or they're at least hesitant about it. And, you know, a lot, not just with the Orioles, but all over the league, that was expected to get done today didn't.
I know. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. Right now I have Birds Watchers Aaron Gershon on the line. So what do you think what they're trying to do? Like, what's the move? Do you think they're going to probably try to hold Givens in terms of trading him maybe in the offseason, or are they going to wait to the trade deadline next season to trade him just to get his value up? Maybe he'll pitch better next season.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, it really depends on what he puts together here the last 2 months. If he has a lockdown last 2 months and he's blown one or two saves and, you know, his ERA, you know, lowers his ERA on the year and then maybe finishes like with a 3 ERA combined the last 2 months, he's mm-hmm. probably tradable during the offseason. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's obviously something you want to do now so you can get these guys in your minor league system and, you know, get them situated and, you know, let them know the Orioles, you know, coaching staff and developmental staff. But if not, yeah, he's probably a guy, why not, you bring around, and it can't hurt to have him around and you try to move him again next year, but his value is only going to go down because, you know, 30 is the magic number in baseball nowadays. Mm-hmm. Players are on the wrong side of 30. You know, GMs aren't wanting as much of them. So even big-name free agents who are still some of the best players in the game, when they turn 30, they have trouble finding contracts, even when you in your head, like we saw with Dallas Keuchel and Craig Kimbrel this summer. It was like, wow, yeah, how are these guys not signed? They're two of the best players in baseball.
Agreed, yeah.
But they're on the wrong side of 30.
Mm-hmm.
So I think given value only goes down as it gets older, so your hope if you're the Orioles is he has a really good last 2 months and you're able to ship him off this offseason and get something for him.
So were you surprised? I mean, were you also surprised that Villar wasn't traded?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay. I thought the Cubs really needed an infielder. They obviously went the outfield route with Castellanos and a couple other pieces, but I was surprised about VR. Alberto, I wasn't as surprised about, but I thought his name was going to be dangled around.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mancini was the tough one,
yeah,
obviously.
That was a tough one. I didn't want to get rid of him.
Yeah.
I didn't want to. I'm not going to lie to you. Even though I know this team needs to, like, really mm-hmm. build that farm system, but I did not want to give up Trey Mancini. You got to keep a young player. You got to keep one. And he was the young player that you can build around.
Yeah, I think there's two ways of looking at it. If they did the deal, I'd want to see what they got back for him.
Yeah.
And if it was the right deal, I'd be happy. And if not, I'd be happy that they kept him.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's two ways of looking at that. One is, you know, he's 27. He's got plenty of years left on the deal, which is dirt cheap right now. He's not making anything.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, 27, he's just entering his prime. And, you know, you got to get fans in the ballpark somehow.
Yes.
He's the best player on the team, hands down.
Yes.
But he is 27, so the Orioles were probably still at least 3 years away.
Yeah.
Now you're looking at a 30-year-old Trey Mancini when he's ready to go, when the Orioles are ready to go. So then you're thinking, okay, well, now our farm system is ranked number 8 in baseball after a heck of a draft. You know, they got a lot of pieces last offseason with the Britton and Machado.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to go down the list. It's upsetting to think about, but it is what it is.
I'm with you.
But that's the other way of looking at it is, man, when they're ready to compete, now you're looking at that wrong side of 30. And if the plan for some reason doesn't work, then you lost his trade value. So that's the other way to look at it. But that's something you can correct in the offseason or next trade deadline if you're thinking, okay, well, these guys in the farm system are developing slower than we thought. Mancini's definitely not going to be here when we're ready to compete. Now we'll trade him. Luckily, at 27 and having, you know, the year to control, he's still tradable, even if it's not now. So I think keeping him this year, not a big deal, but I hope, as much as I like the player, and I love the player, actually, and he's the best player on the team,
mm-hmm.
Hopefully they will be smart and pull the trigger if need be, but right now, you know, if it had to be the perfect deal and they didn't get it, so they did the right thing.
So before I let you go, you mentioned like their timetable to be for them to be competitive again, because Lord knows, I want to say this, like, you know how long I waited for this team to be competitive when like the Adam Jones era, like, you have no idea how long I waited. Like, I've waited, you know,
it's stunning,
right? And then all of a sudden when that was just dropped in my hat, it's like, oh wow, we're a good team again. It was like, shoot, like, I can like watch this team, cause, like, I'm not watching my Orioles often anyway, but I can really be like be into it and whatnot and seeing the progression of these young kids, these young guys at the time. They were young. Adam Jones, John, like Scope, Manny Machado, even Chris Davis to a certain extent that people hate now, but it's hilarious. But like just watching that team, and like you felt some type of joy. And obviously what happened last season was so terrible. But you know, they having to wait another, you know, 3 years for this team to be good. Like. What do you think this team can be? Like, I guess, what is this team trying to be? Are they trying to be like the Astros? Are they trying to be like the Cubs? Like, what are they trying to be in terms of building this thing up?
You know, that's an excellent point comparing them, because they are, in my opinion, they're trying to be like Houston because of who's in charge, and that's Mike Elias. And obviously, he was the mastermind. He was not the mastermind, but he's in the passenger seat of the Astros rebuild. I mean, he was there starting in 2012, and 2012 was the year they drafted Carlos Correa with the number one pick, and then it took off from there. It turned into Springer and Bregman down the line, and trading away everything as value they had. I mean, everybody with value they shipped off. And you know what? It worked, because obviously they won a World Series, and you know, they're, I think after today, they have to be the favorite to win again this year. So I think Elias obviously has been in a building where they started from literally the ground up to having no fans in the ballpark to having, you know, just a terrible, terrible, unwatchable team losing over 100 games in multiple years. You know what? It's shaped and similar, though, if you look at it, because the Orioles are probably going to lose 100 games again this year. They lost it last year. And now the farm system, you got the number one pick. Rushman is as big of a lock as any number one pick I can remember to be a stud in the big league. So you have that going for you. You have a much improved farm system from this time last year. I mean, we were ranked 23rd going into the season. We're at 8 after the draft. I mean, that's huge. So I think they have a direction. I think the challenge is going to be, one, you play in a much tougher division than Houston did, because the Yankees are always going to be good. The Red Sox pretty much always going to be good. They're a little shaker now, but the Rays have the best farm system. They're good right now. Toronto's farm system is unbelievable. So, you know, it's a tough place to rebuild, but I think Mike Elias has the right vision and he's doing it the right way so far.
Yeah, I hope so, because this is very depressing. I won't lie. I know what they're trying to do, like this tanking and obviously building it back up. But it's hard, man. It's really, really hard. It is so hard.
And it's depressing to see a beautiful place like Camden Yards.
Yes.
I mean, I've been to a ton of ballparks around the league, and Camden Yards is just nothing. I mean, there's a ton of great ballparks, but Camden Yards just takes your breath away every time.
Yeah.
And it sucks to see the place almost empty, because you know it's a good fan base, but you can't blame people for not spending their hard-earned money to go to these games. They're 9 times out of 10 going to lose, and there's not too much talent on the field to watch.
It's like you're in the AL East, like you're basically a minor league team. And I feel bad. These are grown men. They're professionals. But when you're going against the Yankees and the Red Sox, And the Rays as well too. It's like when you're going against these three teams, it's like it's so different. Like this, it's just like you can see the difference. It's unreal. Exactly. It's not fair.
It really is. I mean,
it's really not.
The Yankees lineup is the best thing I've ever seen on tape. The Red Sox lineup is almost as good, which is scary to think about. And Tampa does these wacky things with the bullpen, and even Toronto's infield. They have their infield for the next 15 years, and everyone stays healthy. It's a tough place to rebuild, but you know, I really do believe that the office is doing the best they can, and their plan is clear, which is sometimes a problem with rebuilds in general, where you know, I'm going to use the New York Giants, who I'm a fan of, unfortunately, right now, and they don't have a direction in their rebuild. I know it's a different sport, but it's a comparison with rebuild.
I get it.
You need a direction. The Orioles at least have a direction.
That's true. Hey, Aaron, man, I appreciate you for being on, man. This has been a great segment. I appreciate it. I really do. Thank you for being
absolutely.
On, Aaron. And Aaron, before I let you go, again, let our listeners know about Birds Watcher again, and also how they can catch you on social media.
Yeah, you can catch us on Twitter. It's BirdsWatcherSFFS, for fan-sided, so FS. Or just Google it, BirdsWatcher, it'll come right up. And then you can follow me on Twitter, A. Gershon, GERSHON99.
Aaron, man, thank you so much. I appreciate you, my man. I'm going to have you on again.
Anytime, man. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem.
All right. That was Aaron Gershon, man. Awesome, man. You heard from Birds Watcher. They're on that fan-sided site. You heard what Aaron said. Oh, my God. That was a good call. I'm glad I finally got to talk about my Baltimore Orioles. I've been waiting for that. After we saw Manny Pacquiao beat up on Keith One-Time Thurman, could we see Pacquiao Mayweather too? And is Tank Davis the next big thing in boxing? We'll have my man from the Quarterly Report, Armand Lee, come on the show to talk about this after the break. You listen to the Urban Sports Saint for ages. You dig? Deuces.
And with the local DBC news, LL Cool J with a triumphant comeback. For a solo. But tonight,
don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years. I'm rocking my pants. What's up with the fear? Making the tears rain down like a monsoon. Listen to the bass go boom, explosion.
Mama said knock you out. I'm gonna knock you out. You're listening to Urban Sports Scene. I'm Wally, and I'm your host, Will T. Ray Jeezy. They're out. But still been a great show. A bunch of guests. They came to support your boy Wally, and I appreciate them. But my homie, though, you know who my dude is. Right now, we have host of the Quarterly Report podcast, Armand Lee, on the line. What's good, Armand?
Hey, what's going on, y'all, man? How y'all living?
We good, bro. Just me and you, my man. Just me and you. We gonna do the darn thing. I had the homie Troy on too. We were talking about the Wizards.
I don't leave it like that.
Oh, my man.
Hey, man, hopefully we can, lift the spirits up a little.
We talk. It's a great time in terms of boxing, man. We gonna lift the spirits up right now. We didn't have a show last week, and so I want to talk about Manny Pacquiao defeating Keith Thurman in a split decision, becoming a WBA super welterweight champion. What were your thoughts of that fight? On that fight?
So, you know, I've got a few thoughts, so I'm not going to take too much of the time. Uh-huh. Number one, you know what? Let me do it like this. My biggest takeaway, and shout out to Manny, and we obviously going to get to him in a second. Uh-huh. He's a living legend. Despite, you know, there may be some Universal Soldier, you know, chemically enhanced.
I knew it.
You know what I'm saying?
But
it's all good. It's all good. We'll get a man's flowers right now. But I'm honestly, my biggest takeaway from that fight was my increased appreciation for Keith Thurman. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, I know you're talking about.
Mm. If there's anything that I hope, not just fans, and I don't even think we as viewers of boxing, we don't really get too caught up with win losses. I think we want to go back to the day and age where De La Hoya fought everybody.
Yeah.
Vargas, Mosley fought everybody.
Mm-hmm.
God bless the dead. Sweet Pea fought everybody. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Bernard fought, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't so much about your win loss record. It more about the moments that you gave us. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. Miguel Cotto is one of, I think, the last era's most, you know, beloved fighters.
Yes.
And although he fought, you know, the Margarito fight comes to mind, where he fought a guy who was cheating.
Yeah.
And you there's just no amount of respect. You can't even verbalize how much respect everybody who loves the sport has for Miguel Cotto, because he literally fought everybody, and he fought with such vigor, and he was a true champion. And I hope the one thing that comes from last Saturday's fight is that promoters, advisors, boxers themselves, they understand that, you know what, it's okay to get the won and lost column. It's okay. Because in defeat, I think I speak for most people who watch that fight, there is so much more respect for Keith Thurman after his loss than it was no matter what win. You know what I mean? He's got some big wins on his record, right? He beat Sean, mm-hmm. He beat Danny. But when Keith at the end of the 10th, and he got hit with a clean body shot.
Yeah.
And earlier in the fight, we saw a dude just literally, it wasn't like, you know, people always talk about a dude quit or whatever when it comes to fighting. And we really got to change the way we talk about boxers, man, because it's truly a blood sport, man, and like true champions get in it. But early in the night, you saw a guy, your body, when you get hit with a clean body shot, your mind is telling your body to get up, but your body's like, bro, I can't do it.
Yeah.
And the fact that Manny Pacquiao hit Keith with a flush body shot right underneath the ribs late in that fight, and Keith spat out his mouthpiece, but he stood up. He didn't go down. He didn't take a knee when it could have been. You know his body was telling him. I was amazed at, yo, Keith has heart. In the middle of those rounds, I mean, obviously, Manny, I think Manny won. I don't agree with the split decision, yeah, but I do think it was a competitive fight.
Yeah.
I definitely think it's one of the leading contenders for Fight of the Year thus far.
Yeah.
But Keith fought his ass off in those middle rounds. Manny came first round, dropped him, and from that point on, Keith was behind in the cards. But during those middle rounds, Keith fought his behind off, and he made that an extremely competitive fight. And I was just so impressed and just came away just so, I don't want to say proud because it sounds like I'm stunning him, but like, I had more respect for Keith in defeat than I had ever had for any victory that he had. And I hope most fight fans and like I said, boxers and promoters look at that and aren't afraid to make the big-time fights, because ultimately, no one cares about your one-loss record.
They
just
don't.
Give us the great moments. Give us the great fights and get in the ring with the fighters that we want to see. So that was my biggest takeaway from the two Saturdays.
No, I'm with you. I think no one really cares about the win-loss thing. I think this Floyd Mayweather thing is kind of like over. It's been built up to a point now. People are trying to make it, oh, you
right,
just lost. You're not undefeated. It is what it is. Like, just because you're undefeated doesn't make you the best boxer ever. You know, to me, I mean, I didn't watch Muhammad Ali in his prime, but everybody would tell you that Muhammad Ali was the best, or somebody would say Joe Louis. You know what I mean?
I'm glad you said it. Nobody knows Muhammad Ali's record off the top.
No.
Nobody knows Sugar Ray Robinson's record off the top. Nobody knows, God bless his head, Pernell's,
yeah,
Roy's, Bernard's. Like, win-loss records, Sugar Ray.
Yeah.
No one cares about that. You know what I'm saying? Like, Floyd, obviously, that's part of his brand. And
yeah,
I'm not hating on Floyd. You know, do your thing. But there's not going to be another Floyd. And that's cool. You know what I'm saying? Like, get back to business, you know?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I'm not... Again, but like, I'm with you in terms of Keith. I was impressed. I was actually impressed with Keith's interview. Like, you know, usually people make up this BS about, oh, man, you know, I ain't have this, I ain't have that. Oh, man, I got robbed, Adrian Broner.
Right.
But, like, what I liked about, you know, Keith Thurman was like, I'm going to learn from this. You know what I mean? He knew he lost. I'm going to learn from this and whatnot. And to be honest with you, you know how many people went down on that body shot? Like, you know, nobody, like, he toughed that thing out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, he toughed that thing out. I have respect for Keith Thurman. I think that, you know, this fight doesn't, my only issue, not issue with Keith Thurman, it's not an issue with Keith Thurman. My only concern, I think that sounds better, concern for Keith Thurman is that what is he going to do after this? You know what I mean? Because
right,
my boy Ray, you know, who's on the show, Ray was like, if he loses to Manny, what's going to be there after Keith Thurman? And you know how boxing is, you know, right? You know, like, your promoter is going to go with the cash cow, right? And in this brand, it's Earl, right? Now, you're not going to throw...
That's an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Not to cut you off, but Keith, he delivers on television. Obviously, that was his first pay-per-view fight, so as a headliner. But every time Keith has been on CBS, they've done well. They rate well.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously Manny Pacquiao is a bigger fighter, right? But the reports are that this fight two Saturdays ago did over 500,000 views or buys.
Yeah.
Whereas Earl, and again, Earl wasn't fighting Manny. He was fighting Mikey.
Yeah.
But still, Earl did close to 400,000. So
yeah,
I think Keith will still be able to get big-time fights because he has shown that people like to see him fight.
Yeah, no, I think he'll get big fights. I'm like, what's going to be next for Keith? You know what I mean? Like, will Al Haymon want Keith to fight Spence? You know what I mean? Is that a fight that he wants to see? He can build that up? Or would Al Haymon be interested in saying, you know what? Keith already got a loss. I'll work with Bob Arum. Let's see if we can make him and Bud get together.
Oh, Bud.
You know what I mean? Like, he got a loss. So it's not like he's his cash cow. Like, his cash cow is Earl, right? That's how it is. What it is, his cash cow is Earl right now. So Keith got a loss. He can fight Bud. I'll allow that. We can make that work.
Yeah, I mean, the issue with that is, mm-hmm. if you put Keith versus Bud, if that's the fight you want to, you know, go across the street on,
mm-hmm.
then you are potentially hurting Errol's future.
Very good point.
Right? Because let's say Keith does beat Bud, and I don't think any of us would believe that would happen, but if it were, then the desire for a Bud Spence fight has been lessened. And and the biggest takeaway, if you listen to the reports, isn't really about cross promotional fights.
Yeah.
It's that the guys over at Top Rank want 50-50.
Then they're not worth it.
Al Haymon and PBC correctly are like, hold on. You and Terrence Crawford have had two pay-per-view fights now.
Yeah.
And both of them have sold less than 180,000 buys.
Mm-hmm.
So you aren't bankable. Errol Spence's first pay-per-view, like I said, did close to 400,000. So the 50-50 split can't happen.
It can't.
And there's nobody else for Bud to fight that would generate any type of eyeballs. So if you then just gave them Keith, I mean, if you're on PBC side, Keith, he had two real competitive fights versus Danny, number one, and versus Sean. I think you and I both agree. We think Sean is going to lose in a few weeks when he fights Earl.
Yeah.
You could run Keith and Sean back. Keith and Danny back. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Or you could run Manny and Keith again, because it's clear every time they ask Manny Pacquiao about Errol Spence, you think they said the boogeyman's name.
It's the truth,
though. Because he's on one.
Why would he?
Manny has made it perfectly clear.
Why would he, though? Like, this is, I was telling.
I ain't mad at him.
Yeah, I'm not mad at him. I was watching that fight, and I was telling, and I told folks, I was like, Keith is the best fighter for Manny, because Manny can, I was like, Manny, it's the best fighter for Manny. In terms of the young guns, that's how I look at it. In terms of young guns, Keith is the best fighter for Manny out of the three. We can include Keith in it, the three, right?
Oh, for sure.
All right. So after that, right? So then you have, it's either Al Heyman's gonna make Manny the sacrificial lamb for Earl, and I know Manny don't want that. So Manny probably will jump that and say, you know what? Why fight Earl? And why fight Earl? Like, why even put that?
Right.
Why take this? I can make money and take this L, and I can get killed. Like, why would I want to get killed when I can get probably paid more, regardless of what the boxing community doesn't like? I can get paid more to fight Mayweather and still and win or lose or whatever. I'll still have my wits. See.
I was rocking with you on the Z Floyd.
You don't want it. It's more money, though. I know you don't. I'm just saying. I'm just talking about Manny's point of view, though. You dig what I'm saying? Like, I'm talking about Manny's point of view.
Oh, for sure.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm going to make more money fighting Floyd, and, like, I'm not going to die. You dig what I'm saying? Like, I'm not going to die.
No, from a business standpoint, I completely understand why not just Manny. Everybody who's anywhere close to 147, hell.
Yeah.
And then we're talking about the Golovkin a few years ago, talking about he would drop down to 150
to fight Floyd.
Fight. Yeah, everybody wants to fight Floyd because Floyd makes the most money, even though he's been retired, quote unquote retired for a year or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Like that's like you said, that's the cash cow. He's the golden goose. Everybody wants to attach themselves to Floyd Mayweather because Floyd Mayweather gets you, you're not just a paid, he gets you your biggest payday of your entire career.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But I have no desire to see Manny Pacquiao fight Floyd. I don't want them in the same room. I don't want them to be in the same. I don't want them speaking at the same time. That's how far away I want them to be. Because I'm done. I don't want Manny versus Floyd at all. Manny, you know, he looked great again. Give him credit. Uh-huh. I'm not going to put any shade. So I'm Universal Soldier. That's all I'm going to say. But if Manny's going to fight like that, then there are some exciting fights to be made.
Yeah,
I think, though, to what you're saying, Manny doesn't want. He doesn't want to go Bud.
He
left Top Rank because Aaron wanted to continue. Yeah. He wanted to use Manny as the jumping point for Bud's career. Manny didn't want any problems, and he was smart to leave, to not fight Bud, as he's just as smart not to get in the ring with Errol. So, honestly, man, call it a career. Like, you went out on top. If you, if you, seriously, bro, listen. If you're not going to get the Floyd fight, and obviously I don't want that, clearly.
You know he's going to get it,
though. I don't want to see Manny fight. You know what I'm saying, Sean? I don't have any desire to see any of these joints. Like, go ahead. I don't want to see Manny fight Amir Khan.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
I don't want to see Manny fight. You know, hey, dog, cool. You did it.
Yeah.
You know, you were in the history books. You are a living legend. You go out on your sword. You won. Go to hell home, man. Go ahead and run your country, Joe. Let nobody try to see you fight through it, bro. Go ahead and get out of here.
Look,
bro,
you know what's going to happen. It's unfortunate. You know what's going to happen, though. I'm trying to tell you this, Armand. It's going to happen. I will give you credit, though,
Wally. You were the first person that I heard on any platform was like, yo, Manny going to beat Keith. And you were the first person. And I thought Keith was going to win. I truly thought Keith was going to win, but you had it.
Yeah, I'm not trying to claim it. I'm just saying that I know Manny's motivated for that bag. Like, I know he's motivated to get that bag. He don't want to die getting the bag, though. I will tell you, he don't want to die getting the bag. He knows who he wants to fight. Let's put it this way. Manny is very smart. I know everybody looks at Manny like, yeah, Manny, you dumb. Like, hey, look at him when he talk, like, he dumb. But I'm telling you, like, Manny is smart. He knows who, at this point in time of his career, he knows who he wants to fight. He doesn't want Earl, because you know Earl will kill him. He doesn't want Bud, because Bud will kill him, because he's not at that level anymore. He knows that, you know what? I can beat Thurman. Like, it's like Sugar Ray back in the day, when Sugar Ray was sitting, I think it was a Hagler. I want to say it was Hagler. And he was just sitting back. He waited till Hagler got old. He said, I can beat him. I'm going to take him. And the same thing with Manny. Manny was like, you know what? Out of all these young dudes, I can get him. Him I can get. You know what I'm saying? Right. And I can make some money off of him. Cause I'm still Manny Pacquiao. I can make money. I can beat him. Look good. If I look good beating him, there's one more fighter I really want to fight, because I know I can take that money to the Philippines.
That's how
he's thinking. I'm telling you. Because you're right. When they talk about Earl, he knows it. He knows it. I'm telling you, he knows it. Unless there's a deal, unless there's a promise that says this. I will say this. If Manny is guaranteed to fight Floyd next, but Al Haymon's like, the only way you fighting Floyd, you got to fight Spence. This is the last fight. Then, yes, he will get Spence. But Spence will be his last fight. I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
It would be his last
fight. Spence, like I said, Spence will treat him like, oh, yellow man. It won't be no fight.
I'm telling you, look, bro, I know this. Look, Armand, we had always been in agreement. You know I'm a pro Pacquiao man. There's no way in hell that Pacquiao beats Earl. No way in hell.
No.
Like, I don't care.
There's no way that Pacquiao makes it to 12 rounds
versus Earl. I agree with you with that too. I don't even think Pacquiao gets past five. I don't think he gets past five.
This was the most frustrating thing when it to circle back to the fight with Keith. You know, Keith got, you can see, you know, about 5-6 years ago, Keith, he had a trajectory. Like, he was going to be the top guy at 147.
Yeah.
And he was big on the knockouts. He was headhunting. And he never really truly developed the body work.
Yeah.
And watching the fight versus Manny was just so active, and Manny was, you know how Manny goes, man. He always controls, he's changing angles, he's hard to hit.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking to myself, man, if Keith would have had a better game plan to work the body earlier.
Yeah.
And give Keith credit, he was hitting Manny Pacquiao clutch.
He was.
But I feel like Manny's activity and his output would not have been as high had Keith developed and deposited some money in the bank working the body.
Yeah.
When it comes to Spence, you ain't got to worry about that. Spence loves the body shots.
Yeah.
And Manny, bro, I would wear all black watching that fight, man. Cause you're going to be watching, you know what I'm saying? It's going to be a sad, but it would have been a lot of foul banging and song singing when my burglar arm starts ringing, man. It would be ugly.
Look, man, the Philippines, they'd be crying. There'd be tears in the Philippines, dog. Real talk. There'd be tears in the Philippines. If that fight ever happens, the people would be very, very upset. So let's go to B-More, man. And B-More at the Royal Farms Arena, WBA super featherweight champ Javante Titan Davis TKO'd Ricardo Nunez in the second round. Your thoughts on that fight?
Man, I love how Tank has, when it comes to talent.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can name 10 fighters. And that's being conservative, right? I don't know if you can name 10 fighters who have more talent than Javante Davis. And again, you could probably try to cut that down to 7 to 5, right?
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to just talent, Tank has it all. He's like, if you were to program You remember the fight night game? If you were to build your own fighter, you would build Tank. He's got the power, he's got the speed, the athleticism, I mean, just everything, right? But, man, I can't get excited anymore seeing Tank do this. Every time Tank fights, he looks like a world beater.
Yeah.
And he beats the dude up, and it's like, all right, man, let's go, man. Like, let's try. We got all these dudes, Campbell, Lomachenko. Like, there are so many fights to be had. Gary,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so many fights that could be had with Tank, and it just never happens. So Tank is like a tease, though.
Yeah.
When he get out there and gets busy, bomb. He looks like one of the best fighters in the world. But he's not active enough, and he doesn't fight the top fighters. And there's just so many great fights to be had. At this point, I'm like, man, yo, wake me up when it's time to get busy. You know what I'm saying? Because I've seen you do this every single year. I know you can beat these dudes up and you can do it in spectacular fashion. But now I want to see you fight the creme de la creme.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It's that time now.
Yeah. And again, we just went through three fighters at the top.
Mm-hmm. And Santa Cruz. Even Santa Cruz.
Yeah. I mean, dog, like, there's so many. So many.
No, I'm with you, man. When you look at Tank, I had this debate with on Twitter. You know, a lot of people from BMO, they getting their feelings because Tank's the son, man. He's like their product. He's like Jesus over there. Jeez.
Nah, he's the truth. He's
nice. He's nice though. I'm not taking nothing away from him.
He's proud of him.
No, they should be proud of him. He seems like a cool kid too. But at the end of the day, man, you gotta fight somebody, right? You gotta fight somebody. Oh. You can't just beat up, and yeah, we see the skill. The skill is there, but you got to fight somebody, right, dog. Like, you got to fight somebody. And even watching that fight, it was like you knew, like, he was punishing that dude. I'm going to say this again. I've said this before. That dude's going to take an L any which way in that fight. So I'm not diminishing and saying that, like, this dude was going to beat him. But that fight was stopped prematurely, in my opinion. Like, and I thought, like,
I mean, he was hurt.
Yeah.
It was only a matter of time. I'm not even upset for real.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because dude, he hit the ropes and his eyes rolled back. He stood on his feet. But you knew what time it was.
Yeah,
you know,
I knew it. Yeah, I knew. But the way he responded afterward, I was like, yo, dude could have fought. He could have fought some more. He would have got that ass whooped. Don't get it twisted. Like, when I say this, I'm not saying, like, you know what, dude would have had a chance if this kid kept fighting. Nah, I was like, death was a coming. Eventually, it was coming. There's nothing you was gonna do about it. But I was like, yeah, they stopped it a little early. He could have went down the third round. Probably would have went down probably 30 seconds from then. But still, though, I was like, you know, like, you could have had the fight could have kept going. But when I look at Tank, I'm with you, Armand. It's like, the skill is there, man. The speed, the boxing ability, the power, obviously the power. But it's like, when are you going to fight somebody? Is Mayweather promotion going to keep babysitting you or coddling you to a certain point? Eventually, you're going to have to show that you're a prize fighter for real.
I mean, just go through the list, man. Carl Frampton will be a hell of a fight. Gary Russell will be a hell of a fight. Josh Warrington. You said Leo. You know what I mean? Obviously, everybody would love to see the Farmer fight.
Yeah,
you know,
the
Farmer fight, called out.
Yeah.
And they're in the same division. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I don't even know how realistic. I mean, they've played, you know, footy for some years now. And I was going to talk about Lomachenko and Tank. But that's like 5-6 fights. We just literally rolled off off the top of your head. And you're like, yo, there are all these fights to be had. And y'all just circling each other, but not really getting ready. Like, Tank does this every year. At this point, to go back to your original question, what were my thoughts on this fight? My thoughts are, man, okay, been there, done that. And that's not to take anything away from Tank. Because, again, I think Tank could be special. But you can't be special until you get into the ring. And iron sharpens iron. I'm sick of you fighting these dudes who aren't comfy. I hold you at high.
Yes.
In no acclaim.
Mm-hmm.
So that means I expect a lot from you. You beating dudes up like that don't move me anymore.
Because
I know you can do that. Now let me see what you can do versus the best in the world. And until Tank or his promoters or whatever the case may be, I'm not going to put blame on anybody. But the reality is this. It's time for him to show improve.
Yeah.
I don't need to see him beat up Uber drivers anymore. I want to see him beat up,
exactly.
You know what I'm saying? For real. I want to see
real
him
talk.
Beat up world champions.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I said on another podcast like last night. I was like, I'm not knocking anybody's profession, but I don't want to see him beating up a bagger and Shoppers. I don't want to see him beat up somebody from UPS. I want to see him beat up a real professional, a real top tier boxer.
dog.
Yeah.
That's where we at now.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it seems like you and I agree. We hold Tank in high regard, but it's kind of hard to keep on doing that now because he doesn't fight anybody.
Yeah.
And he's not active. Tank, at this point in Tank's career, he's young. He's got all this talent and skill, and he's a draw. He brings people out. Royal Farms had 14,000 people.
Exactly.
They said the Showtime fight had over half a million. He's a draw. You would expect Tank to be fighting three times a year now.
Yes.
But he never does. Like, I don't know what's going on with his team, but as a fan, I just want to see Tank finally get to it, man. Like, we wasted time now, man.
Yeah. And if you're going to fight, and my thing, you're going to fight that, if you're going to fight on a limited basis, then fight somebody, you know, that's capable. Like, that's somebody who that's a top-tier boxer, you know what I mean? Not top-tier, or a top-ranked featherweight, you know what I mean? And you're not even doing that, so it's like, I mean, I know it's a homecoming fight, but show out. I mean, we've seen boxers in other weight divisions that, you know, took challenging boxers at home.
But Fought Gamboa in Nebraska,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, huh?
And that was when Gamboa was like, yo, yeah, that was the dude, right?
Gamboa was like, yeah.
Yeah, right. Like that was that's the thing. You fight the top fighters in your home, man. Kell fought Golovkin. Kell moved up two weight classes, brought Golovkin to his home and fought him. Yeah. Like that's the thing. Yo, go for it, bro.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I don't know what the thought process is.
Gary Fard Diaz, who was the number one, I believe, he was number one rated, the number one ranked opponent he had to fight for his number one mandatory boxer, and Young Diaz. Yep. So you fight like at the Harbor. You know what I'm saying? Like, so you fight who you have to. If it's at home, you fight a high quality dude at home. I don't get this. You know what? I just want to give my hometown crowd something worth it. You know what I'm saying? Like, that don't make any sense to me. So
he's better than that now.
Yeah, you're not just starting off in the game. You're in the game. You're that dude that people want to actually see now. So it's time to step it up. But Armand, before I let you go, man, let our listeners know about your podcast and how they can catch you on social media.
Yes, sir, man. Every Tuesday, each and every Tuesday, make sure you check out the Quarterly Report podcast, man. If you like boxing, if you like basketball, if you like entertainment, music, the whole nine, man, check me out, man, on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you listen to pods. The Quarterly Report podcast, that's Q-U-A-R-T-E-R-L-E-E. So quarterly based off my last name, The Quarterly Report. And make sure you follow me on Twitter. I'm at Quarterly Show. Again, Q-U-A-R-T-E-R-L-E-E Show. Again, real fun stuff, man. NBA, basketball, music, TV, the whole nine. Check me out.
All right, man. You know I appreciate you, my man. You know what I'm saying?
All right, man. Thanks for having me on, bro. Anytime.
All right, man. You stay blessed, my man.
All right, bro.
All right. Again, that's my man, Armand Lee, host of the Quarterly Report podcast. Make sure you download it on iTunes, Twitter, Stitcher, all that good stuff with Google Play, all that good stuff that podcasts are being sold or downloaded. And also, don't forget to join me on Sunday, this Sunday, August 4th, at Bowie Bay Sox Stadium for the first annual celebrity kickball game in honor of a close friend of mine, Barry Sharp. We call him B Sharp, and all affected by mental illness and suicide. This game will include former NFL players like Santana Moss, Lee Biden, and Vasante Shenko. The kickball game will be after the Bowie Bay Sox game, and the Bowie Bay Sox game is at 1:35 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can buy your tickets at www.groupmatics.events/event/Lawrence Law. Lawrence Law is spelled LAURYNSLAW. So make sure you buy your tickets. Do it ASAP. You can do it now as you listen to this podcast. But I want to thank all of my guests for being on the Urban Sports Scene. Make sure you catch us next week. Anyway, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene for ages. You dig? Deuces. A mega. Lead us out, big homie.